Well, good morning, everybody. This is Lenny Lawson, the car guru himself and by himself, flying solo again today. The radio station people are AWOL. So I am just, I know how to work this stuff. I've sat here long enough and watched Bill Meade and Tim Cable work the controls and the dials and so forth. You know, most of this was designed like back in the 50s, apparently. It looks pretty tattered and worn out. Radio stations don't spend a lot of money on nice offices, or, you know, they don't even have to fix their hair. Bill comes to do the show in curlers sometimes, and Tim doesn't have much hair, so he doesn't need curlers. He'll just wear an old ratty t-shirt, and here I am with my tuxedo on. Imagine that. No, I'm just kidding. I'm very casual. I'm a casual guy. You know, my dad wasn't that way. Max Lawson was a product of the 40s, and he was, you know, he wore the fedora hats, not necessarily to work later on, but, you know, it was always the business suit, white shirt, dark tie, nothing flamboyant when he worked for Chevrolet Motor Division. He was a district manager originally, which meant that he called on dealers. I have a district manager. They sit in an office in Greenville, South Carolina, and call me. I never see them. But back then, they actually went from one dealership to another, you know, of the same brand. Their job was to work with dealers to basically solve their problems if they could, help them get additional inventory when they needed it, intervene in certain issues such as rebate issues and things. A district manager, different names for them are like zone manager. It depends on which brand you're on. They call them different things. General Flunky, I guess, would be a good name for some of them. But our people with Nissan and with Ford are good. The Nissan rep actually comes around and visits us, but the Ford rep is online only, and over the phone. We get to talk to her occasionally, and she knows her stuff and helps us get extra products sometimes when she can. Right now, that is just about impossible. Extra product is not available. We just want enough to be able to sell, and so does every other dealer in East Tennessee and the world in general. We are getting some really surprising inventory that's starting to flow. We got an F-450 the other day. We got an F-350. We got an F-250. So those were stuck in a parking lot in Louisville, Kentucky for a long time, and we had no previous notice that they had been shipped. They were still showing at the plant, which means that they're not ready to be shipped, and voila! We look outside, there's a truck, and it has all those on there for us. So we got a couple loads of Nissans in the other day, so that's helpful. And so it's starting to flow a little bit. So that's good news for car buyers and for car dealers as well. Maybe it will relieve some of the price pressure. Right now, the only downside of buying a new car is that you don't have rebates. You know, there are a few models out there that may have some remaining incentive money on them, but for the most part, rebates are used to incentivize customers to buy things that aren't selling, aren't turning very well. So if you have a huge rebate on something, it's because, you know, it's got too high of a day's supply on dealer lots. Now, there are other reasons why they put rebates on, and some of it just has to do with the competition. If you've got Ram, for example, or Silverado, Chevrolet is offering a $5,000 or $6,000 rebate on their fastest-selling model, then Ford pretty much has to respond, or they will lose some sales. So sometimes it's just competitive pressure that creates incentives. But I can pretty much assure you that you are not going to see any kind of movement on incentives over the next 6 months until this chip crisis starts to improve. So anyway, that's the little bit of the news going on in the auto industry. So we will take our first break and be back here in just a minute. Okay, folks, I'm back. You know, I listen to a lot of satellite radio. Occasionally, I can't get away from commercials. Of course, you can't either. We are trapped in a world of commercialism. And if you're watching just about any media, you're going to have to, you know, deal with the marketing aspect of it. That's, you know, I run commercials during this radio show because I have a captive audience. No, not really. I guess you could get up and or turn the radio off, but you know, it is a way you get the word out. And you know, we have to try to do our best to drive traffic either to our websites, our telephones, or our lot. Now, the market has changed significantly. There's so many different things that I normally talk about that just don't apply right now. One that definitely does apply is when somebody wants to get out of something, what do you do? Now, as I began this segment, I started talking about radio and satellite and stuff like that and all the commercials you have to deal with. One of them that you hear a lot about are timeshare cancellations. Now, I have never owned a timeshare. I've had several timeshare presentations that I thought was just a nice little invitation to go eat something, when in fact I was going to be bombarded with the invitation to buy something, you know, or buy a timeshare at some location, whether it be with Marriott or, you know, I remember I went to, Tara and I went to Cancun one time, and we heard about this where you could go and get a really nice breakfast and so forth. Well, it was tied to a timeshare presentation. I was highly disappointed, but the eggs were good. But other than that, I was disappointed. Timeshare cancellation industry apparently is a big deal because sometimes people sign contracts and they don't know how to get out of them. This happens in the car business a lot. People who all of a sudden develop buyer's remorse after they've spent a lot of time and a lot of money on a new car, and then within a week they figure out that, you know, this is totally wrong for us. What did we do? But anyway, if you're upside down, which most people are when they buy a new car, is there a way to get out of it? You know, if you owe $10,000 more on your car than it's worth, can you get out of that? The answer is yes, you can. But the correct answer, I guess the correct question is, should you? Let's say that you made a, I don't know, 2 years ago you made a purchase that worked for you then, but your circumstances have changed and you've seen this new shiny new thing that you really want. You'd like to have it more, but your book value is $10,000 less than what you owe on the vehicle, your payoff. First, find out exactly what your payoff is. A lot of people think they know, but they're not sure. Sometimes they're just afraid to call. But there should be no fear in gathering information that can make a difference. So find out what your payoff is. Find out what your car is worth. Then you'll know how much, how upside down you are. The true term for that is negative equity. You know, equity is supposed to be positive, right? You buy stock, you want it to go up in value. You buy a house, you want it to go up in value. Cars go down in value. You know, it's one of the arguments for leasing is that, you know, when you lease a car, you're actually paying for the depreciation on the car plus a low interest rate. And so, you know, when you buy a car, you're also paying for that depreciation. You just don't realize it until you trade it. And then it becomes very apparent that maybe you paid too much, or maybe you carried negative equity over from your previous purchase. See, that's the problem. This negative equity, let's say it's $10,000, that's like a big chain around your neck. And you want that to go away, but it just doesn't. You know, you may have a dealer say, well, we'll pay off your trade no matter what you owe. That is the craziest line I've ever heard. Of course they'll pay it off, and then they're just going to add it on to your subsequent contract, and your payments will be more because you're adding that $10,000 negative equity into there. So many young people and older people don't understand that concept. They don't understand that you just can't make this go away. You know, if a dealership is showing you a really high trade allowance, it's probably because they've jacked up the sales price so much that they can show you this false number You know, folks, the only number that matters is what is, well, there's two numbers that matter. It's what is the retail value of what you're buying, or what is the MSRP on a new vehicle that you're trying to buy. The other number is what is the trading difference that you're having to pay. You know, if you're having to pay, you know, $30,000 difference, maybe that makes sense, but that's how much you're actually going to have to pay sales taxes on. It's how much you're going, that your monthly payments are going to be based on. And then you need to be able to consider the term of the loan. I mean, we got a lot of people that are financing cars now, very commonly financing cars for 84 months. Now, when I first heard that there was going to be 84-month financing, I thought my eyes were going to bug out of my head. I just can't imagine paying for a car that long. Now, the good news is that cars are lasting longer than they used to. You know, I can't imagine buying a 1974 Malibu and financing it for 84 months. Back then, it was 36 months was a long financing term. But the cars were junk after 100,000 miles. That's just the way it was. Now, today, I'm seeing cars traded into us occasionally with 250,000 miles, 300,000 miles in some cases. They still run. They've never had a major engine failure or transmission work. Now, is it a ticking time bomb? Probably. But the cars are lasting. So the manufacturers, the banks, they can stretch these financing terms. But the big driver for that is people still need a $400 a month car payment on average. They just can't handle payments a whole lot larger than that on the typical wage that most people make, you know, just typical blue-collar wage. You know, and then they have other debts and responsibilities and house payments and all those things. You never want to put yourself in a bind when you buy something. If you are putting yourself in a financial bind, then you shouldn't buy it. I don't care if you are $10,000 upside down. I mean, you may have a $350 a month payment, and that's comfortable for you, but you want to trade it. You really want to trade it, but you just shouldn't. I mean, you should deny yourself that as long as you can until you at least get to close to a break-even situation. You know, if you're wanting to trade, if you do an 84-month contract and you're wanting to trade in 3 years, you shouldn't have financed it for 84 months. You should probably lease the car instead for like 36 or 48 months. I mean, that's, to me, is the justification for leasing, is match the lease term to your normal trade cycle. Does that not make sense? I mean, does it make sense to finance a car for 84 months if you trade every 2 years just so that you can hit a low payment? And then if you're not paying at least 20% down, or you're carrying over negative equity from your prior loan, which doesn't go away, it stays with you, just like your best friend. You know, I've actually heard of dealers selling gap insurance to people and lying to them and telling them that when they trade, that's what gap insurance is for. It takes care of that negative equity. I actually heard that the other day. And it's just, you have to watch out for what's being said in the finance office and by the dealership. You are not going to be able to buy the car and just say bye-bye to your negative equity. I don't care how they structure the numbers. Just make sure that the dealership is not jacking up the sales price in order to be able to show you more for your trade-in. You know, if somebody, for example, you're looking at, it's really easy to do on a used car if you're not careful, is to lose sight of what the vehicle's worth and start focusing on something, you know, what you're getting for your trade-in. The only thing worse than that is focusing on what the monthly payment is. Now, I talk about this all the time, but people who focus on the monthly payment are the ones that get taken advantage of. Because, I mean, I know the monthly payment is important, but it's really easy to get your payment where it needs to be for your budget just by extending the term. And if the dealer is lucky, he finds a bank that has a really low interest rate and a long term, then, you know, he can engineer a huge profit on that deal for the dealership at the sacrifice of you and your budget. So you just got to be careful with that kind of stuff. There is no such thing as a free lunch, right? If it sounds too good to be true, what's the rest of it? That's right. It probably is. So those are the best rules to go by. The vast majority of car dealers are upstanding, outstanding, and salespeople as well are good people, and they're not going to take advantage of you. But there are plenty of bandits out there and short-timers who are just looking to knock somebody's head off. And I hate to use that terminology, but I've heard it before, and that's exactly what they're doing, is they're taking advantage of buyer ignorance, not stupidity. I didn't mean that. I'm just talking about, you know, people who do not know and understand what they're getting into, and they focus on the wrong things. So just keep that in mind. That's the best advice that I could give you when it comes to buying a newer used car. So anyway, we will take our last break and be back here in just a minute. I have a lot of people ask me what kind of things they should have in their garage to help take care of their car and maybe be able to do some things that they don't want to have to pay somebody to do. And, you know, I'm very careful with what I say because a lot of it has to do with their capability with their hands. You know, what are they able to do? What do they understand? One of the best things I love to do is to really give somebody a good orientation after they buy a car from me. I mean, I think every car buyer needs to know where their spare tire is. And what do they do if they have a flat? You know what most of them say? I just use my cell phone. Well, what if you don't have a signal? You know, what if you're on some deserted road? Can you change your tire? And, you know, so many of them say, well, I don't want to change my tire. I don't want to get my hands dirty. I think it's important for people to know how to do that. I think it's important to know how to jump start a car. I think it's important to know how to check all of your fluids and to add fluid as needed, to check the air pressure in your tire. So, you know, as far as what you should have in your garage depends upon to what extent you're going to be working on your car in your garage. I mean, in my garage, I have a bucket, and I have all the cleaning materials that I need to wash your car. I also have a jack. I went to Harbor Freight, and I bought a small but substantial floor jack that I could use. Now, I actually took that floor jack camping with me this past weekend because I had a camper and I had a truck. And if I had a flat tire on either of the two, I didn't want to have to try to use one of the jacks out of the trunk I was driving a truck, so out of the truck or out of the camper. I don't even know that the camper has a jack, so I took one with me. It comes apart, you know, it has a big handle on it, okay, but you can take that apart. But I would have that in my garage for sure. I need something to charge my battery, a trickle charger. You need jumper cables. If you don't have a second car, you need a booster box, something that you can just leave plugged in to your wall that you can jump start a car if you need to. And those are portable. And if I'm going on a vacation, folks, I've got jumper cables in my car, or the booster box. I'm taking one of the two. As far as the tools and stuff that you own, you know, that's pretty much up to you. I mean, I have one of those slide around where I can sit down on it. It's like a stool that has wheels on it, and I can slide around the car. And if I want to clean my wheels or do some detailing like that, I can do that. I'm not going to really get under my car, so you know, and do anything underneath. I have owned a car dealership, so that makes it kind of handy for me. But, you know, some people might want to buy something that helps them slide underneath the car to do work on the underside. You just got to be careful with that kind of stuff. And using jack stands and jacks and different types of lifts, that can be very dangerous. There's a lot of people that get hurt doing that kind of stuff. But, you know, have plenty of rags and some extra oil that your car might use, because most people do not check their own oil. Let's face it. I saw a lady at a gas station the other day, and she was actually airing up her tires, and I started to give her a standing ovation. You know, you just don't see people do that often, you know, making sure that the air pressures are good. I also have a small, well, mine's not so small, but an air compressor. is an important thing to have. I use it to pump up, you know, my tires, obviously, but I use it, you know, if I have to pump up one of those inflatable mattresses. We have, you know, the kids, grandkids and stuff like to play on those things. Or if I have to pump up the air in the tires of my lawnmower or something like that, that's a good thing to have. So these are all, I guess this is kind of like gift ideas that you could get for your car guy or just for you so that you could learn how to do some of this stuff on your own and become independent and be able to kind of learn a little bit about what's going on with your car. If you ever have any questions about stuff like this, feel free to call me. My cell phone number is 423-552-2020. That's 423-552-2020. If you know how to text, text me first. I look at pictures all the time, people wanting to sell cars and stuff, and they want to pick my brain a little bit about an issue with a service problem or something like that. I mean, that's the value that I think that after being in the car business for, this is my 43rd year in the car business and our 50th year as a family in East Tennessee running a car dealership or multiple car dealerships. So if you need somebody like that, if you don't have a friend that's in the car business or know somebody that is available to answer your questions, I'm that guy. And if you don't believe me, try me. I invite you to do that. And I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and we will see you on Monday.